Well, parenting is just one of the many topics that we want to cover and produce materials for, because it's something that, you know, parenting and disability, it's a whole area all by itself. And so that's going to be our next actual discussion here. We have two wonderful people to help us begin that discussion. Dr. John Street. I first met John, my longest exposure, first exposure to John was during seminary in a pastoral counseling class, and John proves the adage that you can get through life with a good smile. So I love this guy's smile. But on top of that, John has been such a tremendous encouragement to these two worlds coming together. You could hear in his own testimony how important this is, etc. And so I'm really excited, and he's very passionate about the parenting issue. Also, Josiah Grauman is with us. I first met Josiah before they went off to Mexico. He and Crystal, my wife and I, had lunch together at church for some reason. I forget why that was exactly, but they were getting ready to go to Mexico. He had no Spanish when he left. Now he's fluently bilingual just a few short years later, but not just conversational Spanish, theological Spanish. The guy teaches theology in Spanish. So God has graced him with the ability to learn a language. And he also lives disability on a daily basis. And so these are two men who, they're not just really smart about God's word. They live this stuff in a real and genuine way. It's just an honor and a joy for us to have him here to teach us.
So, Brian, do either one of us begin? Is that the idea here? Okay, good. Well, okay, I'll start. That means I get to ask the question of Josiah. And if he takes the entire time, that's fine with me. So. Can you share with me a little bit, Josiah, your challenge as a parent? Because the focus here is upon parenting challenges, especially with disabled children. A little bit of some of the challenges that you face as a parent, you and your wife, Crystal. Share with us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I'll echo the words that Paul shared when he started his session, that I feel like in the spectrum of disability, we're blessed to be on the sort of less severe side of that. Mm-hmm. But I have a genetic mutation of TGF-beta-2. It's called Lewy Dietz syndrome. It essentially weakens all the connective tissue in the body. That's arteries and ligaments and tendons and such. And our first and third babies have it as well. So just lots of surgeries to replace arteries and tendons and stuff like that. I think Silas is on surgery 21.
Wow.
He's seven. He's a trooper in the back row there. And obviously the fun of one parent having the same thing and another parent not, and just kind of, we have every possible kind of, those who have it and those who don't.
Yeah. I know that, and I've had to counsel many, many families that have children with disabilities, and with numerous either parents like you who have their own disabilities and certain physical challenges. So what are some of the unique and difficult challenges you face in a family that is hurting? And I mean, it's difficult enough to raise children in our day and age, just average raising children, Christian children, and honor and love the Lord, and then you add upon that certain disabilities and the severity of different disabilities. What are some of the unique challenges that you face in this?
Yeah, again, just thankful for Paul's session, and I think we do view what you call challenges as blessings. You know, we see how the Lord has used it in our lives and are thankful to him. I also think, to start to answer the question, you know, Ephesians 6 applies equally to all parents, no matter what their children are like. I mean, we're all equally sinners, equally in need of the grace of God. And I think there's the reality, too, that every parent struggles with how to take the principles of Scripture in Ephesians 6, you know, to raise our children in the instruction and discipline of the Lord, and apply that uniquely to each child. But I think, you know, as we think of our own circumstance or others with a disability, I just always bring my mind back to, you know, the three things that Paul commands us there. So we're to instruct them, to discipline them, and to do that without exasperating them. Mm-hmm. I think instruction is probably similar, whether the child is disabled or not. They're, you know, we got to teach them the Bible, you know, start to finish, Genesis to Revelation. Though there might be a few unique challenges. You know, if you think of a child with autism that maybe struggles to, you know, have a 15-minute devotional time sitting on the couch. And so I think as parents we have to be creative and strategic in how to think about, okay, well maybe that's hard. Maybe they can only sit for a couple minutes at a time, and we're going to work on that. But we can act out the Bible, and we can try to live out Deuteronomy 6, you know, of talking about theology when we're standing up and we're sitting down and when we're going to the store, you know, talking about his omnipresence. And every time we're going to nap, talk about the fact that God doesn't sleep. He watches over us and his sovereignty. And I think for us as parents, the disability causes all these theological questions to come up at a very young age. Why did God make me this way? And so just being able to instruct them on those issues, understand the relationship between sin and suffering, as we heard this morning from Paul.
You know, that process of acting them out, that I was always the donkey in the story of Jesus on Palm Sunday. And the kids rode on my back. They
it's
were
better
Jesus.
Than Balaam. You should see that my kids are hitting me.
Yeah.
So the three things, you know, instruction. The next one is discipline. And I feel like that one can present maybe some more unique challenges. Times in the hospital, long hospital stays are hard to think about how we're going to discipline. Times when Silas has been in a cast from chest to toes and trying to think of how to apply discipline. Because at the end of the day, rebellion is rebellion.
Yeah.
And the Bible talks about the rod of correction gives wisdom. The Bible commands me to discipline my child. If I don't do that, I'm sinning. And so our question is just always, okay, how do we do that given this unique situation? And also beyond just disciplining them, I want them to love correction. So much of the Proverbs is about embracing correction, embracing rebuke. So I think there's that balance of I want to apply discipline. At the same time, I can't discipline for every sin. Right? I mean, Chris and I often talk about the fact that, you know, Bible says, you know, rejoice always, pray without ceasing. Like, if we would try to apply consequences every time they sin, you would never stop. And so, you know, you're trying to think of how to be wise about choosing certain things that you can work on and then be consistent, you know, and never kind of letting them get away with that. And I think one of the biggest challenges, to throw back the question to you, is how to discern the difference between rebellion and disability. Johnny in the video talked about, you know, someone with severe autism who's throwing a fit. For us, it was more, you know, orthopedically, there's some immaturity there, and so they're spilling things and they're falling over, and you're asking them to do something, and you know they can't. So that's clearly a disability issue, not a rebellion issue. But how would you counsel someone, for example, that has a child with autism?
Yeah.
Rebellion is rebellion. How to discern the difference between the two, and when should we give consequences? When do we say, you know, that's...
I think that's a very legitimate question. It's a question that always comes up in counseling. And let me start off with a general premise here. And that is, to be a good Christian parent, whether you have a child with disability or not, requires a significant amount of wisdom. And part of that wisdom is knowing your child. You never, ever punish a child for childishness. You only bring punishment to bear when you know that there is defiant disobedience, okay? And one of the ways I like to illustrate it for some parents is, and I realize the varying degrees of disabilities, but let's say Johnny is playing airplane in the living room and knocks over your favorite vase that you've had in your family for 200 years, all right, crash to the floor. Well, you've never told him not to play airplane in the living room. You've never said anything like that before. He's just being a child. He's holding out his arms and running through the living room. Now, even though you may be upset over the fact that that was a priceless vase in our family, that was not defiant disobedience. That was childishness. You may warn him and say, I don't want to see you doing that again, and from now on, you're not going to play airplane in the living room anymore. And when you know that he understands that, and again, there's certain degrees of mental disability here, but you know he understands that, and then the next day, there he is in the living room playing airplane again. Now, that's defiant disobedience. The same act, but two different results here. One is a warning, the other one is punishment. And the other issue is that given the disabilities of children, I think a lot of Christian parents are very confused about the use of the rod, to use Proverbs. You've got to understand that that doesn't come up until Proverbs 13:24, and before Solomon brings that up, he has 13 chapters of verbal instruction, all right, before he even brings up the issue of the rod. And you've got to understand the nature of a mashal, a proverb. What is the nature of a proverb? It's to present a general truth, not a hard and fast, this is what you do all the time, all right? A general truth is that the use of the rod can be effective in parenting for children who can handle that physically, understand it mentally, those kind of things, then it can be effective. But you have children who can't handle that, obviously, physically, who mentally don't understand that, don't have the ability to be able to process that. Then it requires an extraordinary amount of wisdom from the parents on what is it that really ultimately speaks to the child. The other principle I want to say to you, the first one was that you never punish a child for childishness. You only punish for disobedience. But the other thing is that when you're dealing with parenting issues, it's very important that you are speaking to the heart of the child, not just the behavior, so that, and here's the principle, our ultimate goal in parenting is not our child's obedience, all right? Because ultimately, we cannot determine that. We can't determine that. Our child, in their own will, is going to decide how they're going to respond to that. And this is where confusion comes in, because a lot of Christian parents take Proverbs 22:6 as a hard and fast promise. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, him not depart from it. It's not a promise. You study that carefully. It is a warning that says, bring up a child. Literally, the Hebrew says, upon the mouth of his way. In other words, bring up a child and let him follow his own bent, which is a sinful bent. We know that because a few verses later, he says, foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. All right, sinful. You let a child go his own way, and when he's old, he'll not depart from it. No, you've got to interrupt that way. But there's no hard and fast guarantees that that child's going to be responsive positively to your discipline or whatever it is you bring into their life. So the rod is not necessarily a universal thing that parents should always use. It's not. The rod is representative of discipline. God disciplines us, but he doesn't literally reach out of heaven and spank us. He doesn't do that.
Sometimes it feels like it.
Yeah. Sometimes it's worse than that. All right. And it's really hard. But the rod, there's nothing wrong with the rod when it's used lovingly and caringly and with the goal that we talked about on the video, and that is every discipline event becomes an opportunity for the gospel. But it is also a figurative way to describe any kind of structural discipline you can put into that child's life that speaks to their heart. What is it that speaks to that child's heart? That may be something completely different. And nowadays, you take away the privileges of a kid on the computer, and it's like death has occurred. All right, I mean, this is just horrible. They can't play in their Nintendo anymore. They can't do it. And sometimes that's as effective as. But with different children and different disobedience, this is where the parent has got to learn that child. You've got to be a disciple of that child. And I think a lot of contemporary parents today are not willing to have the time investment to be a disciple of their child. They really don't know their child very well. They want to resort to really quick things that are going to correct the behavior rather than speaking to their heart. I think Ted Tripp did a great job and a great service to the church when he published that book, Shepherding the Heart of a Child. And if you don't have that particular book, you need to sell your shirt and buy it. Because he talks about the issue of the all-important thing is not so much the behavior of the child. It has to do with the internal condition of that child's heart, and you're speaking to that constantly in what you do, your attitudes. We express there on the video the fact that there in Isaiah chapter 1 and verse 3, God says, children I reared and brought up, but they have rebelled against me. When you think about that, that is the perfect parent speaking. That is the perfect parent. That he always did absolutely perfectly for his children, but they still rebelled. So sometimes we put unusual burdens on our own backs as parents by saying, when my child is not responding to my discipline, then there's got to be something terribly wrong with me, or that may not be so. Now, it could be. But it may not be so. It may be that that child has decided to rebel. You go to Ezekiel 18, you know, and Ezekiel 18 talks about the proverb there where God said, well, the people of Israel were going around saying the children eat sour grapes for their or the parents eat sour grapes for the children's teeth are set on edge. Well, God hated that proverb. Someday I want to preach a sermon on all the proverbs in the Bible that God hates. Well, here's one of them, all right? God hated that proverb. Why? Because it accused him of being unjust. The fathers did sinful things, and the children are now paying the consequences for the sinful things the fathers did. And God says no. And then he gives five scenarios in Ezekiel 18. And one of those scenarios is that you have a righteous man who lives righteously, is faithful to God, and he raises a son in this godly household, and that son grows up and becomes rebellious, mean, and hateful. Now, if you take Proverbs 22:6 as a promise, then that should have never happened. That was an impossible scenario. But it's not a promise, it's a warning. So the implication is that you can raise your child with all the best environment and input, and that child can choose in their heart to turn their back on it. And we may torture ourselves mentally because of that, and certainly we love our child, we want our child to be able to respond, but ultimately, they are God's child first, ours second. We only have a short amount of stewardship with them, and we need to do the best we can, but then it's in his hands.
Yeah, I think such an important point that as parents, we often put unbiblical expectations upon ourselves. And I think Chris and I are constantly just going back to Ephesians 6 and say, that's not my role. My role is to instruct them every day. Yeah. My role is to discipline. My role is to not exasperate them. The rest is up to God's sovereignty and their choice. Getting to that third point then, okay, so we instruct them, we discipline them, and you had some great points there about that's not always with the rod. This one has to hurt, but it doesn't always have to be with a rod. I think another unique challenge for children with disability is not exasperating them. Mm. Right? I mean, you have a kid in a wheelchair who's wants to be running with autism, and you see as a parent, you see that they exasperate quickly. Mm-hmm. So I think in our thinking, it's always, okay, my child is going to get exasperated because they're sinful, mm-hmm. because they live in a sin-cursed world.
Yeah.
But I don't ever want to be the cause of their exasperation.
Exactly.
But what advice would you give parents in that situation? Specifically, I think, thinking of my family, when you have multiple children and some of them don't have it, and so the children with disability, you're trying to, in a sense, you have to spend more resources on them, possibly even more time. It seems like favoritism. There's just all those kind of elements that come into seeking to instruct and discipline, but do it in a way that's not provoking them unnecessarily to wrath because of my parenting.
Yeah. Well, you know, expectations are the seedbed for exasperation. And the expectations can come from the parents. I expect my child to be able to do this and perform. You can see this even with children that don't have disabilities. You know, dad puts them into baseball and football and wants them to really succeed, you know, and they don't quite succeed, so dad's upset at them, type of thing. So this expectation can come from the parent to the child, but the expectations can also come from within the child. Helping you as a parent, helping your child adjust their expectations to their abilities. That's really important. Adjust their expectations about life and adjust how they can take the abilities, even though some of them may be limited, take those abilities and use them in order to glorify God. Again, that requires an unusual amount of learning your child and becoming wise as to my child's limitations. I think sometimes very obedient children, at least externally, set us up for failure, because then we have one that's just a handful, okay? And you say, wait a minute, they were raised in the same home, they had the same influence, they have the same input, we took them to church, we did all this, we prayed with them. Why is this one child such a problem and these kids are great? You know, I'm actually more concerned about the kids that are well-behaved in that home. You know why? Because they know how to disguise their rebellion. I mean, long-term, I really am. They know how to disguise it, because then they become teenagers later on. They're the ones that the parents are saying, well, they were so obedient for so many years, and we failed to address their heart. You know, when all of our focus was here, the child over here that's openly rebellious, that child is laying their heart on the table for you. All right? You can see it. There it is, plain as day. They're not holding anything back. And I tell parents, you can actually work with that better, even though it's a challenge, it's hard. You can work with that better. But I cannot tell you how many times it's the kid who is the well-behaved kid, you know, that all of a sudden reaches puberty later on. All of a sudden they're starting to see rebellion that they never saw before. Well, it was there. It was in their heart. They just learned how to disguise it under externally right behavior. So you have to be wise. You have to know your child. You have to know their hearts. You have to be able to address them as individuals, not as a corporate group, because they're individuals. They're different. They have their own individual wills. This is the reason why in Ezekiel 18, when God says the soul who sins will die, then God is really acknowledging the fact that each generation, each child is going to make their own choices. All right? I realize there are some parents who say, well, yeah, but what did God say there in Exodus 34 and verses 6 and 7 there, where he says, I will visit the iniquity upon the third and fourth generation? He was not saying that the third and fourth generation is going to pay for the father's sin. That's called generational curses. That's a horribly unbiblical concept. There is no such thing as generational curses in the Bible. It is that each generation, when they learn the sin of the father and they choose to do it to the third and fourth generation, they can't turn around and say later on, well, dad started it, it's not my responsibility, even though you're repeating it. No. God will punish them in the third and fourth generation. That's that's really incredibly important to understand. So helping that child understand that the choices that they make in regards to rebellion is not just rebellion against you as a parent, but is a rebellion against God, and that those choices then begin to form character that become ingrained long-term in their life. Some children, even though they hear this, will still walk away from it, and other children will be responsive. Or, I've seen this, that parents will give all kinds of godly input in a child. The child will grow up, become an adult, leave the home, go out and live an ungodly, sinful lifestyle. And then later on, the seeds that mom and dad planted, then all of a sudden, later on in life, bear fruit. I saw that in the life of my grandfather. His mother was my great-grandmother was a very godly woman. My grandfather was a horrible man. He was a drunk. Professional photography, made lots of money, spent it all on alcohol. My mother grew up in a horribly drunk, with a drunken father. But later on in life, the seeds that his mother planted bore fruit, and he surrendered his life to Jesus Christ and turned around. So we may not even in our lifetime see the seeds bear fruit in that child's life. But we have to be faithful. We have to be consistent. That's the reason why discipline is not an event. It is a process. It's not an event. It's a process. And you may lose. You may figure as a parent, I'm going to lose these battles. But ultimately, you can win the war. That's really key.
What's next?
All right, let me ask you this question. What really, for you, Josiah, what has really been most helpful as a Christian parent in raising a child with disabilities?
Yeah, I think the cliche answer, but it's necessary to say, it's God and Scripture. There are some peripheral things that have been helpful, but just being in the Word with my wife, you know the importance of reading the Bible and getting on a yearly plan and just studying the Word of God together every day. But there's something about suffering and disability that demonstrates to you the need to be doing that. You just know that you can't do it on your own. And Paul kind of talked about this a little bit too. I mean, suffering has this capability of intensifying the sanctifying work of the truth because it demonstrates our need for it, our deep dependence on it. So, just being in prayer and in the Word with my wife. I think friends have been super helpful as well. We learned pretty early on with our children that some of our friends were going to be sort of sensitive to our needs and were going to sort of adjust their kids' birthday parties to do it at a location that we could join them, and we've become very close to those type of friends, and other friends have decided not to make those choices. We had some original friends who I think would be sort of subtly trying to steer our parenting in a different direction. We got a lot of kickback early on about sort of disciplining a child in a wheelchair, and that we should be more gracious. And that's just so hard, especially when it comes from a fellow believer.
Yeah,
it's like, why can't you encourage me to obey the Bible? finding friends who are going to do that, who are going to call us accountable and encourage us to parent biblically, I think has also been really helpful. So obviously that all happens in the context of a local church where there's a body of believers who are encouraging us to walk with the Lord.
You know, you bring up a really wonderful thing here that I think a lot of, and I've listened carefully to a lot of parents with disabled children and the expectations that other adults have about them and their discipline of their child, where the people outside of the family don't really understand what they're trying to achieve and accomplish. And I'm sure you and your wife have encountered this on a repeated basis. maybe they don't understand, or they themselves have expectations of your discipline of your child that you're not fulfilling. You feel that pressure?
Oh, absolutely. And going back to the need that Paul talked about of having a robust theology when it comes to disability, I mean, you have more people than we'd like to admit who, you know, see a child in a wheelchair, and it's like this automatic assumption that God's just going to save that child because they have a disability, and God saves, you know, children who can't believe and anybody with disability. And so when they then see us, you know, sort of disciplining and parenting like a child is any other child, it's like it doesn't fit with their theology, and they just want us to be gracious because God's going to save them anyhow. Mm-hmm. Like, well, I don't know what the Lord's going to do, but again, I have to do what God commands me to do.
Yes.
Which is instruct them, to discipline them, and not exasperate them.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, I think that automatic assumption, because they have pity on the child, that's the sense, that God's going to have the same kind of emotional response to that child. And that child in that wheelchair can be just as rebellious as a child that doesn't have a disability and can have a wicked rebellion deep in his or her heart that can manifest itself in a variety of different ways.
Yeah, there's just this automatic assumption oftentimes that either, you know, in a Christian world, suffering is going to automatically produce sanctification, which it doesn't.
That's right.
Suffering, the Lord can use it to sanctify us, but it often produces the opposite. There's a lot of bitter people in wheelchairs. But then there's this other sense that they're suffering so much already, God's not going to make them suffer more.
Yeah,
which is obviously unbiblical as well.
Yeah, that's good. That's right. I had something else I was going to share. Ask you. We've got a little bit of time here. I was going to ask you: is there any particular approach that you use when your child is disobedient in public to correct their attitude and behavior?
You can go ask my kids. It's challenging, especially in the world that we live in.
Yes.
You feel like you're constantly under the watch of others. I feel like sometimes even at church, you know, you get a little bit of kickback. We started disciplining our children fairly young, and you know, we'd get comments like, "How do you know that was rebellion?" That goes back to your point. You got to know your kids. Mm-hmm. It's like, "Oh, you'll know."
defy it and gleam in their
eye.
Yeah, you know?
The arching the back and the tantrum. And,
yeah, yes.
You know, you can see that pretty young. I think a couple of things. One is just to be, one of kind of my pet peeves is that, you know, never make an idle threat. You see in public so often, it's like, if you do this, then it never happens.
Yeah.
We've only left Disneyland one time in the morning. But my children know.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not
your word
make an
is
idle
as good
threat.
As gold.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
And so, you know, they've never done that again. Because that's hard. That's a bummer for everyone. I think, you know, when they were very little, you know, we could do some things, you know, in stores and such. I think now they're old enough that we can get them back to the car or even at home, and they can understand why the consequence is being applied. An interesting thing for kind of dynamic for our family is that part of our mutation is that we have translucent skin. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of see my veins, like the blue through there. Mm-hmm. So the first time I gave Abby a consequence, you know, with my hand, you could practically see my fingerprints, you know, on her bottom, because it shows through so easily. And we see doctors almost every week. And so we do have to be really super careful about not leaving marks on our children, which we never want to do. So just trying to be wise about applying a physical pain that's very sort of stingy, temporary, but it's not going to, you know, leave any lasting damage to them. Because we want them to associate their sin with pain, some kind of pain.
Yeah.
But trying to be super wise in how to do that in public. And then there were times, you know, Silas had a hospital stay over, I think it was 6 or 7 weeks. And he's in a hospital room, and you know, Crystal and I talked, like, are we going to pinch him? Like, are we going to, you know, are we going to do something? And ultimately we just, you know, came back and prayed and asked the Lord to help us over the long haul, as you said, that we may not be able to address every single one of these issues today. We are going to talk about it. We are going to, you know, apply discipline any other way we can. And then we're going to, you know, we're going to continue when he gets home. So I don't know. If you got any thoughts on that, any tips?
Yeah. No, that's what you're saying is really good. Obviously, when we're talking about disciplining a child, we're not talking about any form of abuse. We're not talking about you never punch a child, you never poke a child, you never do anything that's going to be destructive or leave long-term harm towards a child. I know some children have skeletal structures. We're not just talking about children. I mean, my mother just passed away about 3 weeks ago. And when she was a little girl, she had rickets during the Depression, which affects your bone structure. Then later on, she had osteoporosis. The doctor eventually told us she's a little China doll. And in fact, one of the technicians in the hospital was putting a glove on her, and he broke her fingers, just putting a glove on because of those kind of things. So some children you can't do that to because of who they are. There are other ways you can still speak to their heart in a disciplined way. And you've got to find those ways how to speak to that child's heart. And the other thing is, when discipline is applied and the child knows it, when we go back to that thing, every discipline event becomes an opportunity for the gospel. When that occurs, you always need to remind that child, what is it God expects of you? And most children will respond, God expects me to obey. No, it's much more than that. God expects me to be perfect. Well, when your child over a period of time is reminded that over and over again, eventually that child in exasperation is going to say, but I can't be perfect. Now, see, the younger they are, in a sense, the more immaturity there is, the more that they think that they can do that. But as they grow in their maturity, they begin to understand, I can't be perfect. And that, again, that's where the doors swing open for the gospel. That is exactly why you need Jesus Christ. So every discipline event becomes that opportunity for the gospel. You're preparing their soul for the gospel.
Yeah, we find too, I mean, even the sort of process of giving the consequences, that whole event, as you call it, it is a moment to explain, you know, the concepts of you're receiving a consequence for your sin, and yet this is my discipline. Like, what are the consequences that God gives for our disobedience? And then the pain, and then afterwards the, well, please forgive me, and then the restoration and the reconciliation and the joy that comes when we confess our sin. It is just such a beautiful picture of...
Well, and I've had a lot of... you know, you talked about the issue of patience, and I think Paul did too in his presentation. This becomes a critical thing for parents, because I've had a lot of parents with disabled children in counseling that shed buckets of tears over the fact that they realize how impatient they had become with their child, and that all they wanted in that moment was to get their child to obey, and they totally lost sight of the overall goal. All right, and they realize it in tears. They say, you know, I caved into the expedient at that point. And we can't allow ourselves the luxury of doing that. We have to exercise patience and long-term suffering with children and adjust our expectations to what God is going to do in that child's life and leave it up to his timing to bring that around. I see Brian is here.